So you need some rest. We all do, so why don't you two come along? I promise, no funny business.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This new season. Blah, 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 blah. Melrose Place, Season 4, Episode 1, Post-Mortem Madness. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, listeners. Hi, Season 4.
Someone must have lived, spoiler, because we're back for a fourth season. We will get into it, including a quick wrap up of who did live, but first, an announcement. Again with this, episode 53, dropping June 25th, is let's read about Shannon Doherty in her December 1991 17 cover story. It is so beautiful. Yes, we're returning to our extensive magazine archive to see whether Shannon is already talking shit about her castmates, whether Brian Austin Green is a, quote, jokester, and much more, or in the case of Chris Foofus, much less. The visual aids will be equally extensive, and support at any level gets you access to our thoughts about the hair aid known as the rat. And to every other extra episode of the podcast, again with this, sitcoms, novelizations, we do it all. So please join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. And now, who survived the season 3 finale? Who indeed?
Yes, there was no way to sort of do this in our usual like siloed storylines because just everyone is in it. So let's just get to it. Our opening scene is the closing scene of season 3, Kimberly running out into the courtyard giggling and then activating her bomb detonator while everyone idiotically just stares at her. And one of our Twitter followers reminded me, which I had forgotten, that the reason that this episode, that the season 3 finale didn't actually end with an explosion was because of the timing next to the Oklahoma City bombing. So for taste reasons, that's why it has that weird freeze that no other episode of Melrose ever has. Anyway.
I mean, it worked.
Yeah, sure.
I guess, like, it's not, you know, I don't know.
Right. I mean, all they would have shown.
We don't know what happens with a detonator. Like, we didn't think they were going to come back from the summer break, and it would just be like, oh, I forgot to connect wire A to tab B. Like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but probably what they would have shown was just, like, the actual explosions, not who gets blown where, you know?
Right.
They probably just would have shown that the explosion did happen, and that was the cliffhanger. But, yeah, you're right. As workarounds go, this one was pretty good. Anyway, this time, Michael steps forward to try and stop Kimberly. Unsuccessfully, the bombs go off, and, of course, chaos and very bad special effects.
Oh, so bad.
The
color
green screening.
Bad.
It's real bad.
Yeah, real bad.
Especially when you know, compared to now, like what any teenager could do on their phone is more incredible than what we see in this episode.
Yeah, just wave some red oak tag and then people like flinging themselves onto a tramp. I mean,
yeah,
it's sort of charming how bad it is. Sort of.
Yeah. So we see each individual get hit by the explosion and fall. Amanda's the first to get up, impressing us all with how sound the complex is. Because she's up on the second floor outside of Joe's place still, and she seems basically fine. The balcony has not collapsed. But then another explosion rips through the second floor apartments across from her. She tumbles down a few stairs. So Sydney is okay, obviously disturbed by the sight of the whole complex in flames. Brooke and Billy are okay. Michael's okay. Billy then remembers Allison and goes to try to get her out of her apartment over Brooke's screaming protests. And by the way, someone else also commented on this on, I forget if it was Twitter or Patreon. Why does Allison still have this apartment? And they definitely could have put in a line about this, but presumably she wasn't going to ship all of her shit to Hong Kong for what was supposed to only be a year contract is A.
Yeah.
And B, if you have that place for whatever the sick rent is, like, you keep it if you think you're going to be back in a year. They could have just had a line where she tells Joe, like, oh, I'll get in touch with you about a subletter or something. But yes, it is weird that she just comes back and is like, oh, here's my place. Anyway, back to Allison and Billy. He finds her unconscious on the floor. He pulls her out just ahead of a falling beam. Then Peter sees Kimberly floating face down in the pool. Did you want to comment on this?
It really did look like one of those CSI like dioramas from that famous arc with, I believe, Danny Bonaducci, among others. But I thought it was fake, and I was like, wow, they really did, except for the little, you know, dolly in the little pool.
Yeah,
they did a pretty good job reconstructing the complex at whatever 1/100 scale. Mm-hmm. And then Peter wades into the pool, and I was like, oh my God, that's real. Like,
yeah,
I almost admire how fake it looked. Mm-hmm. It was really something.
It's like that camera lens that makes everything look like a doll's house, except, you know, just by accident. So he goes to pull her out, as Sarah said. Richard is okay, but he can't get Jane to wake up at first, and then she walks out. She's also fine. The firefighters arrive and start dealing with the scene. Amanda comes down the stairs. By the way, she's still in her, like, satin ivory bridesmaid dress from the wedding. It is not dirty at all.
It's perfectly not really.
No, not at all. Like, there's no mark on it. No ash, nothing. Even though she fell down the stairs. Like, you would think just dust from the normal course of outdoor stair events.
Yeah.
Regardless. Peter helps Joe down and out to the street. So far, the only person not accounted for is Mackenzie. She's about to die at the hospital after a massive heart attack that Richard feels real bad about, but we'll get to him. I mean, she was only in one episode. Like, of course, she's the one who dies. Anyway, cut to the construction site as the other workers crowd around the Hanson brothers. Drink. For the last time.
Smith.
So Jake is alive, but Jess? Glip to.
He's dead.
Yeah, he is.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Goofus beats around the bush about these things. Gallant just spits it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. The more you know.
So from Jess's lifeless, beautiful face, although he was terrible, does not take away from those cheekbones, we slam into the new credits, which now include Marsha Cross, Kristen Davis, and Jack Wagner, and Heather Locklear, of course, still and always a very, very special guest star.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let us get into the episode proper, starting with our E plot. That's your first sign. There are maybe too many characters on this show.
Yeah,
now.
The E is for the extra E's in D signs.
Yes, because our E plot is trouble doesn't bring Richard and Jane closer together.
No.
So at Richard's place the next morning, by the way, Richard's place, you can see in the visual aids, a completely ugly, hideous 80s modern monstrosity.
Oh my God.
From the outside, it's like jagged. Like, it's just so many angles. And then on the inside, we've got industrial pipe, like banisters. Do we have glass bricks? You know we do. It's just
It looks
80s.
Like a cat tree.
Yes!
Made out of Castillo's office in Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's hideous. Like, these are designers, plural?
Mm-hmm.
Who? Did their old apartment building explode? Is that why they're living in this 80s shit fest? It's very bad.
The thing is, when you see this house, you're like, oh, of course these are the people that think that fucking logo type for their business is still good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not.
No.
Anyway, that's where they are. Richard is understandably still upset about his wife's death hours earlier and blaming himself for it. And Jane is still acting like that's a personal attack on her. Sidebar. I don't know what they're doing with Jane this season, but they've decided she's a sociopath because she is so cunty in the storyline and in the next episode, too.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. I think they're like, oh, let's try a heel turn. Maybe that'll make her interesting. Like, no, she's still boring. She's just a boring dick.
Exactly.
Which also, like, I don't know, maybe get her a black scrunchie so we could tell she's supposed to be evil.
Oh, a morning scrunchie, yes, with like a little veil that she can pull over her face.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it a fascinator, but if it's on Jane, it ain't.
It's really
if
not.
If you know what I mean.
So she's been thinking about a way to keep Mackenzie alive, artistically speaking. In Jane's opinion, they shouldn't publicize Mackenzie's death, and they should bury her under her maiden name, which is Harbert, for the sake of the company. I did not even notice this, but you called it out. Who is Harbert, Sarah?
I mean, I don't know if this is true, but like, Ted Harbert, known to my so-called life listies as the dude who was impervious to our postcards. I mean, in retrospect, good for him. We were dorks, but he canceled my so-called life and was the like a big wig at ABC. And then I think more recently he's been head of scripted programming at in the NBC ecosystem. And I think now he's just Harbert sans portfolio. But it is a pretty interesting choice for them to name a character Harbert, because that guy was like in the mid 90s when we were just sort of transitioning into the period where like civilians knew who TV executives were. Like if I say the name Sheila Nevins, like you might know it now if you watch a lot of documentaries, but back then you would not have. Like I knew like that's a weird choice.
Yeah.
I think we knew who Ted Harbert was then. So,
well, it's also, I mean, the timing of it is kind of interesting, too, because that was not a boom time for ABC.
Like, no.
NBC and Fox were where it was at, ratings-wise, or at least buzz-wise. And ABC, like, I don't even remember what ABC shows I still watched then. Roseanne? That's probably Home Improvement. But, like, not a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does seem like it's such a weird choice. It does seem like it can't possibly be accidental.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the name was Smithson or Nevins for that matter. Like if it were Nevins, I'd be like, oh, coincidence. Harbert is like, especially at this time.
Yeah, agree. So Richard is horrified by the suggestion. They just not tell anyone she's dead. But instead of immediately dropping it, Jane claims Mac, a woman she first met like 4 days ago, would be thinking the same way. Like
if that...
You did not earn the right to call her Mac. She fucking hated you, is A. B, she died, like, this morning. So, shut up.
Yeah.
Anyway, Richard claims he will think about it. Jane then presses her luck, saying she's just trying to do what's right. And he's like, for whom? Which, good point.
Yeah.
So then Jane goes to visit Allison at the hospital. We'll get more of this in Allison's storyline. But she tells Allison about Mackenzie's death, not really sounding that upset. Clip three.
It's such a nightmare.
Like, you can hear the shrug in her voice. Like, she does not give a fuck.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. This is not the Mancini for whom this look works. And, you know.
Indeed. So the next thing you know, Richard and Jane are at a mortuary looking at Mackenzie Harbert's plaque, which I don't think they can even have made that fast. Like, I literally don't think physically you can make a plaque that soon.
Yeah, no. I mean, you can't even actually heat up. Whatever. I read a lot of true crime. This is why I know this. Like, the crematorium is not even heated up to working strength by this point. Like,
right.
This is when you know you're in soap land, that it's like, all right. Guess we carved this marble in 2 hours. No problem.
So this is also so disrespectful in that this is the extent of her memorial service. Like, two people standing in a hallway, one of whom she could not stand. Yikes, Jane. But Richard's like, well, I guess that's it. It says he owed Mackenzie a lot. He even loved her. And Jane is like, yep, well, time to go. Like, let a man mourn, bitch. Jesus. But she can't.
She's towing him out. She, like, puts her arm through his and is like, anyhow, like, hauling him. I'm like, I'm nicer to the dog when it's raining on walkies. Jesus.
And not only that, beaming at him with excitement about their next phase, which you can also see in the visual aids. But here's what she says. Clip four.
Now let's get to work and make her even more famous than she ever was before.
I am so sick of you.
Richard.
It's not enough that my wife is dead, and because of you, she's buried under a name that she barely acknowledged. Now you have to celebrate?
Richard, please, it's for the company. I care. Look, I don't want to make you mad. I want to make you happy.
Keep your clothes on, Jane. It's not going to work this time. You go do what you want. I'm going to stay here and mourn the loss of a woman who knew how to be a human being.
I mean, good line. Patrick Muldoon, Patrick Muldoon is a handsome man, but is maybe struggling to keep all the lines in the order in which they're written. And I'm going to leave it there because he's still not as bad as Andrew Shue.
No.
We'll get to it.
It's true. And also, just as a sidebar, like, he's right overall in that speech, but being like, because of you, she's buried under a name she hated. Like, bro, that was your call. Like, you could have said no, you were her husband. Like, that one thing you can't blame on Jane.
Jane had durable power of attorney also. Like, I don't blame this show for, like, if they did that and didn't show it to us on camera, but
yeah,
this is on you.
Moving on to our D plot. Things aren't great for Joe and Jake, which almost rhymes, but then doesn't. Billy finds Jake in a hospital bed with a broken leg and catches him up on the explosion, which apparently took out at least one wall of the complex. He's forced to ask after Joe when Billy doesn't mention her among the casualties. Billy does not think she will be released tonight. And then Billy's like, you haven't said what happened to you. Like, that wasn't your opener. But doesn't matter.
Yeah, like, how did they even find him is my other question.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Why did they even know he was there?
I mean, and yeah, the only hospital in L.A., I guess.
Right. But anyway, we know how Jake fucked up his leg. And then a detective enters with questions we never see. Whatever happens, he apparently deals with it because it's fine. There's no legal ramifications as far as we ever hear. And that night, Jake canes up to the complex, which looks bad. Amanda's there inside the police tape with a building inspector, and he evades telling her what happened to him, asking if he can get into his place. His side of the building is fine, so he can even stay there if he's not bothered by, you know, roughing it. And he says he can put up with anything after the week he's had. And when he's about to open the door to his place, Joe swoops in from somewhere. Like, seriously, I don't know. It's not the laundry room. Like, she's just standing in a bush waiting for him to come home. But asks him what happened to Jess, because no one will tell her. Clip 5.
Simple. He's dead.
Did you?
It was an accident. The cops are calling it self-defense. Whatever it was, I'm putting it behind me.
Oh, God, Jake, I'm so sorry. You shouldn't have gone. This is all my fault.
Joe, this is the last thing I need right now, right? Everybody in this building is feeling a lot of pain, including you. So let's just get past it.
I can't. That could have been you, Jake. Tell me how it happened. I need to know. I'm a part of this, too.
Just stop it, all right? It's over, okay? Everything's finished.
I don't love, I mean, he comes back from this, but Jake is also a real bitch in this plot line.
And there's also the fact that, like, it feels to me like the writers maybe forgot that Joe also knows what it's like to kill someone in self-defense.
Yeah. In the last season finale, in fact.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, not that you have to, you know, form your own therapy group about it, but I just feel like the writers are not like cognizant that this is something like, this is a soap, guys. Whatever outlandish thing your character is going through, someone else probably already has been there in the cast. So try to keep that in mind. Yeah. It's also just such a, I don't know, TV trope.
It is. To,
you know, like he man repress emotions. Okay.
Well, sure. We'll get a little more color about what is behind this in our next scene, which is when we see Jake is the only mourner at Jess's funeral. He pays the pastor cash next to the coffin, classy, and then laboriously makes his way back down the hill with his cane, which is when we see A, he wore jeans, and B, once the bandages came off his head, they took a bunch of his hair with them because it's way shorter than in season 3. And C, Joe is also there. So he spits something rude about her grieving the man who almost killed her, which that fridge he turned over could have landed on her. So don't be so superior, dude. I have not forgotten that fight. But she says she's there for him. And it is not a great conversation for Jake. Clip 6.
What if you wouldn't be in this graveyard in the first place? I warned you about him.
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, sometimes sorry doesn't cut it. You know, right now, I don't really give a damn. I don't care what happened to him. To be honest with you, right now, I don't care what happened to you either.
damn you. I'll pretend it is important because I know you're in a lot of pain. But I thought you might want your mother's brooch.
Okay.
Jesus.
A lot of times we talk about victim blaming, but it does not get any more unsubtle than that, where he's like, you are the reason I had to kill my brother. Like, do you remember why you went to that construction site? It was because he beat her, what we saw, most of the way to death. Like, he was a bad guy. That was not her fault.
Like, everybody else had, you know, months to forget what it was like to watch that scene.
Yeah.
We had a week. I didn't forget.
Mm-mm.
I'd wear jeans, too, and I'll leave it there. But,
well,
you know.
Yeah, fair. But, like, for him to put this back on her, like, it's your fault that he is dead. It's like, no, it's his fault he's dead because you went to avenge her. Whether that was the right thing to do is a whole separate issue. But that was your choice, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway. The fucking brooch. Then she puts it on the ground when he's there with a broken leg and a cane, which is kind of rude, but, you know, he deserves it.
Yeah, he does.
Onward to our C-plot. It's Matt's turn to go to jail. he's the fourth cast member to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney, Joe, Matt, Michael. Mm-hmm. Oh, Peter. He's the fifth.
Sure.
Having missed all the fireworks at the complex, Matt is led into a cell at the county jail. His hair looks regretful as he uses his one phone call on his dad, breaking down on the phone as he says where he is and why. And Mr. Fielding gathers himself and says he's on it and has to put down his martini to deal with this issue. Which is very funny.
Yeah, he, like, answers the phone and is, like, slurp before he even knows what's going on. Which, like, only on TV is it not like, you're receiving a call from county jail.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well played, Matt Sr.
Indeed. So the next day, Mrs. Fielding comes to see Matt in jail. He jokingly, but not really, begs her to get him out. So she introduces his lawyer, Alicia Barnett, played by the great Anne Marie Johnson, 90s character actor extraordinaire. But when she tries to take the phone, Matt gestures for her to give it back to his mom so he can ask where his dad is. And when she's like, he couldn't make it, Matt's like, what the fuck? Glib 7.
He's been making such an effort to understand your lifestyle and your insistence on being so public about it. And now this. You have to try to understand. He's hurting.
I am the one who is hurting, Mom. And what does this have to do with me being gay? Look, I didn't kill anybody, all right?
It doesn't matter if you did. You're still our son.
And you're still ashamed of me.
No, no.
Do you honestly believe I could take another person's life?
No.
Do you?
No.
Just Dad?
No, of course not. Matt, you're going to have to calm down and focus here, okay? Then you and I can talk about how we're going to approach this. Tomorrow morning, we'll get our case together. We'll see what they have to offer us. Maybe we can get a plea and avoid...
Avoid what? With bad publicity? Is that what this is all about? Covering up this case so that nobody finds out that your son's a fruit? Look, it doesn't matter to any of you that I didn't do it. Now, listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. I was framed by a lunatic who wanted to kill his wife.
Oh, Matt.
Get out of here. I don't need this. I don't need you. Out of my sight! Out of my life!
No!
Good for you, buddy. It's about time. And I would not be surprised if Doug Savant was like, I need to get to do some yelling because this is ridiculous. And I agree, and well done.
Yeah, he's been a real taker of the high road to this point with his parents, and that gets you nowhere, apparently.
Yeah, that'll do. Once the word lifestyle enters the fray, it's like, yeah, you know what? Visiting hours are over. Bye-bye.
Yeah. But also, when he's like, you're worried people are going to find out your son is a fruit, it's like, there was a different word that didn't pass standards of practices there, wasn't there, perhaps.
Either that, or the writers are a million years old, and they're like, you know, a fruit means I'm making it with boys.
Right.
Like, guys.
Could be. So when we see him next, Matt has, thank God, developed a sense of self-preservation and called Leisha, the lawyer, to come and meet him. He bitchily tells her he was considering going with a public defender to spite his parents, presumably, but then he heard she had a good reputation and got over himself. I am paraphrasing. So he comes in hot, telling her he isn't looking to make a deal because he did not do it. And the Fugitive movie has been out by this point, so I'm a bit annoyed she doesn't say, I don't care. But instead, she said she's found some witnesses who saw Matt and Paul looking friendly at the hospital, including on the day of the murder, to discredit Paul's claims that Matt was stalking him. However, the cops talked to the witnesses, too, and now their theory is that Matt and Paul planned the murder together. Matt says if he gets out, he can show her tons of evidence of their relationship, which, like, I don't know how that would disprove the possibility that
they second theory. Yeah, fired.
Yeah, exactly. But Leisha advises him not to expect bail. And he's like, it's your job to convince a judge I'm not a flight risk. And she's like, I get it, but it's a capital murder case. Like, for now, he just needs to chill and see what the judge says. But she does, for the record, believe him. So then Matt shows up for his bail hearing in shackles, which when you know anything at all about his character is pretty funny. Like, him?
Yeah, the kind where he's like shackled to his own waist. Like, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as the prosecutor recaps the circumstantial evidence, it doesn't look great for Matt. Leisha does her best, but the judge sides with the defense and sets bail at $1.2 million.
Why? She immediately 1. Says Matt can 2? Pay it. That's such a weird thing.
Yeah.
Especially on TV, like, why the exactitude? Okay.
Right. So she immediately says he can pay it, and Matt's like, wait, what? And when the proceedings break up, she explains that his parents put up their house for his bail, so they care about him more than he thinks. And then that night, Matt comes to the house to thank his parents, and it's emotional, and they don't seem like dicks for once, so good for everybody. Sarah reserves judgment. She still hates them.
Yeah. I mean, I regret that he didn't just, like, send a whatever fax that was like, yeah, thanks.
Send don't an call edible me. Arrangement of fruit.
Oh, heavy on the melon.
Moving on into our B plot, Billy and Brooke are still an item, and Allison has a whole new issue. So Allison's the first person we see after the credits as Billy and Brooke flanker Gurney into the hospital. And even as they deal with Allison's very bad burns, Brooke is bleeding at the personnel to pay attention to Billy's moderately burned arms as the nurse rightly brushes her off. So later, Billy seems to be fine as a doctor tells him and Brooke that Allison's resting comfortably and that she's basically fine as far as they can tell. Brooke continues to be jealous of Billy's concern about his ex-fiancée's proximity to death. Clip 8.
That's all I can say.
When can I see her?
Not till tomorrow at the earliest.
You need to take care of yourself. You need some rest. We both do.
Your wife's right.
Come on. Let's just go stay at my room with Daddy's.
Yeah, well, you know, there's plenty of space there, so maybe Amanda and everybody else can...
I don't know.
Why don't you two go ahead? I have plenty of room at my place.
All right.
I only included that because, again, it's a very accidentally funny line reading from Andrew Shue.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, there. We'll get into it more as this storyline continues unfolding repetitively, but like there are so many conversations that I think are happening off screen in this plot line because Andrew Shue can't handle them.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see the results soon, but that we're rounding into the Brooke that I remember, which is more bleating.
Yeah.
Won't be long now.
So at the manor the next day, Haley is still unsettled by what happened to Brooke and Billy, who are also with him eating breakfast on the patio. Brooke's breakfast, by the way, you can see in the visual aids, it's an absolutely demented pile of just melon. Like, this is the worst fruit salad you can make. It's unacceptable. And it's like mounded in the bowl. It's so much. Yuck. Don't get me started on melon. Haley interrogates what they were even still doing at the complex at the time of the explosion while Billy tries to change the subject and avoid telling him what they were doing, which is fucking. Haley gets snippy and Brooke doesn't tell him to shut up. And he urges them to go on their honeymoon and get on with their lives, tersely shutting Billy down when he suggests that now may not be the time. Brooke, of course, agrees with her dad. Billy reminds her that a lot of his friends were hurt, but she says they're being taken care of and he caves. Classic Billy.
Hmm.
Cut to the hospital where a doctor's unwinding gauze from around Allison's head where it's covering her eyes. They don't know how bad the damage is, but she just begs him to take off the pads and assess her. And sure enough, she can't see. What she has is bilateral vitreous hemorrhages because the force of the explosion caused bleeding behind her eyes. But there's a good chance her vision will return when the blood is reabsorbed into her body. Make note. He doesn't know how long it'll take, though. Left alone, Allison frets and cries, which probably is not good for her eyes. But then, this is the first in the episode that we see the little pre-commercial blipvert recaps, which are coming in season four. We have not had them before. So there's a gif in the visual aids. I forgot about those.
Yeah, me too.
Later, Jane brings in a gigantic vase of yellow roses, cheerfully saying she hopes Allison can smell them. Again, Jane really needs to shut the fuck up in this episode, just generally.
Yeah. Also, I know Allison can't see you, but we can. And she's wearing some kind of like boob sling, midriff bearing contraption with what looks like a loincloth, additionally down the front of a skirt.
Yeah. And it's beige. Like,
yeah, like this is a designer. I don't think so. A and B, cover yourself in a hospital. Like a MRSA is going to crawl into your brassiere. And third of all, what are you doing? Yeah. And she's like, after this, I thought I'd hit the beach. Like, okay, bring a tote bag.
Yeah.
Fucking Jane.
Awful. Allison, who apparently forgot the last time she saw Jane, she called her a traitor, giggles that she can smell them and it's nice. And then she apologizes for their fight. And Jane understands. Clip 9.
I would have blown up too in your shoes.
Ugh. It's a little funny, sorry.
Yeah.
Allison says this experience is making her see what's important, no pun intended. Jane tells her she can stay with Jane until her vision returns, adding that she feels like she never valued their friendship, and Allison pledges never to let them do that again. And then, which is kind of a sly reference to the fact that the writers apparently forgot they were friends. Like, they had no interaction in the back half of that season at all.
Yeah, I don't think they did. Jane was sort of sly. Well, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, no one cares because it's Jane, but like, it is weird.
And then there's that.
Right. So then Billy enters and asks to speak to Allison in private. Allison sends him out and asks Jane not to tell Billy about the whole truth of her eyesight. So when he enters, she's staring straight ahead. He heard her eyes were pretty badly hurt, and she bitterly confirms that she cannot, in fact, see, lying that the doctors don't know why. And he's sorry, so she perks up to note that she's alive and she has him to thank. She just really hopes he and Brooke will be happy, which he shrugs off since he's more worried about her. And she orders him to stop pitying her and go on his honeymoon. So he reverses course from before and says it can wait. And Allison gets maudlin. Clip 10.
Billy, you married somebody else. That's what you wanted, and you got it.
Allison,
leave me alone.
I care about you.
I don't know. This seems like Florence Nightingale syndrome. Anyway, Allison has acquired sunglasses by the time Amanda and her black little orphan Annie dress, which you can see both in the visual aids, come visit her with yet more roses she can't see. These ones are red and not as many as Jane brought. And Allison is a bitch about it. Clip 11.
Hi, Allison. It's Amanda. I recognize your voice, Amanda, believe me. What do you want? Well, I see you already have roses over here, so I'll just put these at the end of your bed. You know what? Why don't you take those to the nurse's station? Maybe they can give them to somebody else. Let me just say this, all right? I feel responsible for most of what's happened. And whatever happened between us before, it breaks my heart to see you hurt like this. So anyway, when the insurance money comes through, I'm going to rebuild the apartments and make them better than ever. And I'm going to put extra attention into yours.
How? You going to put up little handrails or let me keep a guide dog?
Sure, if that's what you need.
What I need, Amanda, is my sight back.
Like, sure, Amanda didn't take your sight. Like, you know, it's not that Amanda doesn't
supposed to be here today. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that Amanda doesn't deserve this generally, but it's not like she did anything lately to warrant it. Like, if she can just laugh off whatever happened with Jane, I don't know. Yeah. Guess Amanda did get her fired.
Well, and I mean, the sunglasses are so funny.
Yeah.
They're just like such performative sunglasses. Like, this yes. is what New Yorker cartoonists use to indicate that in the pencil cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're three blind mice glasses.
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. So then Amanda looks
I
up.
I called her Blind Lemon Parker in the visual aids. And yeah, pretty much.
So Amanda looks up then and is like, you should see this flower arrangement. It's enormous. Like, try again. But then she reads the card. Clip 12.
No matter what happens in our lives, I'll always be there for you. Love, Billy. How sweet. See, he still cares about you. And I don't care what you think, so do I.
It's just it, Amanda. People like you and Billy don't care what I think. You're too busy washing me down with your guilt.
She's not wrong.
No. I also don't care what Allison thinks, so I think she's onto something.
So after work the next day, which, like, why were you even at work? You both got blown up. You had also booked the time off for your honeymoon. Maybe don't go in, Billy and Brooke, but whatever. Brooke's in the process of convincing Billy to demand more responsibility at work when Haley walks in to interfere. Clip 13.
So, Bill, my daughter here calls me at lunch and tells me that you have decided to postpone your honeymoon indefinitely. Now, I would like you to tell her now, in front of me, that you made a mistake and that you'll fly to Hawaii immediately.
Billy,
I'm waiting.
You know what? You can wait until you're strapped in a wheelchair and you're spinning up your peas, but I will never, never take orders from you. And you can continue your sick relationship with your daughter as long as you want, and you'll do it without me.
Billy, honest. I only told him because...
I told you that I didn't want your father in our lives, but obviously that's the relationship that counts for you.
Listen to me, you little jerk. I will not have you talking to me or my daughter that way in this tone of voice.
Right. Why don't you have one of your slaves bring my stuff to my apartment?
Billy!
Let him go.
Daddy, he's my husband!
I can't believe you brought that man into our house.
And without an acting coach!
Also,
I mean, that's like five different conversations that we were told about but did not see.
Yes! When did he tell her he didn't want her father in their lives? Like, he's right, but when did that happen? We never saw it.
Yeah. I mean, but also there's like there's an admirable subtlety that's happening in the way that Haley always calls him Bill, and Billy yes. always sort of cuts his eyes like it's Billy, but whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like there was another scene that was shot that was like, Billy's not a name for a grown-up person, which yep. I guess true, but like, mm-hmm. whatever, that's the character's name.
Yeah.
So that's like a little subtle bit of business that they're like, we could do that scene, but let's just not.
Yeah.
But then there are other scenes where we actually need to see this information being relayed and not just hear about it. Like
yeah.
this marriage was induced under false pretenses on a number of levels and yeah. is fucked up.
Yeah.
And like, I agree that their relationship is creepy, but apparently Billy has seen or divined something that we didn't see, which right. I would maybe not like to have seen, but yeah, it's just weird how much of this is happening outside of the jury's hearing, and it has to be because they tried shooting it in Andrew's shoe is just shooey.
Yeah. No, I think that Kristen Davis and Perry King play it in like moments when they hug or when they're like together and stuff. There's like a slight just on the wrong side of the line, but like not in any way where if you said mm-hmm. anything, they would be like, what? Like, it's not big enough
right.
for you to really. But in all of those scenes, Billy hasn't been there. So it's like if for him right. to have made that observation, you would think there needed to be a thing where like they do that. And then he's like, you know, they just cut to him being like, what? But there hasn't. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right, but they just haven't had an opportunity to show him clocking it because Andrew Hsu doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. And also, if they did do a cutaway to him being like, it would just be one of those like Magomir Pon in Game of Armstrong's faces. That's like, did he understand what was happening, or is he just trying to remember if he left the iron on? Like,
right. Or is he gassy? Like, any of these is possible.
Oh, the baby smiled at me. Did it? Because it's Billy.
So Billy has just re-entered his apartment when he hears a knock at the door. It is Brooke with his stuff. She also told her dad to shove it, she claims. So she was hoping Billy could forgive her so she could move in. And he says something self-deprecating about the state of the place, and she pretends she doesn't care. She just wants to be with him, even in a crime scene. Paraphrasing. And that's where we leave all these idiots for now. Oh, boy. A plot. As Peter, Michael, Amanda, and Sydney keep sniping at each other, Kimberly ends up in the psych ward for the first time? That can't be right.
No.
So Kimberly's led into the hospital right behind Allison, whom we've already talked about. Peter is with Kimberly and calls for a psych consult, and no one at the hospital he was ignominiously fired from has any reaction to his being back. Okay. Peter later checks on Amanda, who's resting in the waiting room. He invites her to stay at his place, and she's all, like, hell, I'd rather sleep on a grate, which, it's L.A., you don't have to. Peter is hurt and sidles off to see patients while Sydney calls after him that she would like to take him up on that offer. And it's established that Michael will take Joe, Sydney, and Amanda to the beach house, but we don't ever see them there, so don't worry about it. The next day, Peter checks in on Kimberly and learns that her mental state is not great. She remembers the bombing, but not her part in it. And the doctor was hoping Peter could help them achieve a breakthrough since Peter was the one who pulled her out of the pool. So he enters her dark room where she's upset and confused, assuming everything she's been told is a lie and that Michael is actually the one behind it all. Marcia Cross is acting the hell out of this. Like,
yeah.
Considering we know what she did, it's like, It's wild how good she is here. Really making it affecting.
Yeah. She's so good at doing that thing, which a lot of soap actors can't do, which is like sort of leaving the writer's room to change whatever is happening.
Yeah. Yep.
And then she can sort of still have room to like turn the ship a little bit and do what they need.
Yep.
Also, this is some explosion that managed to singe everyone's hair into a modified Rachel over the summer. And I'm not hating it. Like her hair in particular, like that forehead is a wonder of the world, but it needs a little softening. And her hair, given that she's, you know, in a psych ward, looks great.
Yeah.
Maybe they should transfer Matt to the criminal psych ward and see if they can't do something about that gel. Yeah, haystack situation.
Still real tall.
It's big.
So Peter tells Kimberly he's going to help her and he's on her side, but there are some facts she'll have to face up to before she can get out of the hospital. And she doesn't want to hear it, but he tells her he was there and he saw the whole thing, plus a woman died, which, like, maybe say that for day two. But anyway, Kimberly completely turns on a dime from plaintive to furious. Clip 14.
I'm not going to let you do this to me. You're in it with Michael, but I'm not going to let you make me believe I did something I didn't do. I could never do that.
Kimberly, I told you, I am on your side.
No, you're not. You're a liar.
Kimberly, yes.
Liar. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up.
Where's Bob, by the way?
Right. Schmob has not been back. No sign of Schmob, but she doesn't have a mirror in her room. So... Mm. Maybe that's why.
Oh, okay.
So the next day, Michael comes to see Kimberly's doctor, whose name is Payson. But he doesn't recognize Michael, even though presumably they're colleagues, which is at this point I was like, are we at a different hospital? But apparently not. So Michael misleadingly introduces himself as her husband and asks to see her, which Dr. Payson does not advise. Michael goes on to say Kimberly's condition is incurable, which I believe the residents in this psych ward might want to make their own judgment on. So Michael continues as Peter appears behind him. Clip 15.
There's no way that she or I can cover these mounting hospital bills. Now the insurance only covers so much. So I'm prepared to sign the papers to have Kimberly shipped, or rather sent to, the county psychiatric facility.
But the treatment isn't nearly as advanced there. I mean, wouldn't you say, Dr. Mancini?
Yeah.
Why don't I handle this, Dr. Payson? Thanks.
Thank you. What the hell are you doing? This is my business.
Oh, Michael, Michael. Let's be clear, okay? I'm not going to let you send Kimberly to the snake pit because you're too cheap to take care of your own wife.
And why do you care where she goes?
Well, that's my business. I'll take care of all the bills after insurance. All you have to do is leave her alone.
We're talking about a psycho who nearly burned down a city block. If anybody deserves to be shackled to the steam pipe in hell, it's her.
Just stay away from Kimberly, Michael. Otherwise, you have to deal with me. And I know you don't want to do that.
Thank you.
If these two don't French at some point, like, I swear to God, the blocking always has Jack Wagner 4 inches from Mancini's face.
So close.
Do it.
Yeah.
Kiss.
Mm-hmm. No. No.
They don't. You could tell Michael's thinking about it, though, and I don't blame him.
Not a bit. Also, the end of this, Peter, like, grabs Michael by the tie and, like, flips it. He just, like, flicks it before moving on to the elevator door. And I fucking love that after Peter just owned him, we also see him big man on campusing around. Like, he's completely off screen for the end of that clip when we hear the elevator and him being like, thank you. Well, Michael looks like a chump. It's great.
But Michael, like, Calabro always has that little flicker of, like, game recognizing bigger game. It's awesome. Love it.
So then Sydney meets Amanda in the courtyard that night and learns her apartment is safe to return to. Sydney's is, as long as she's not bothered by the smell of smoke. Also, Amanda just casually mentions everyone's doubling up during reconstruction, so Sydney's new roommate is Amanda. Sydney will get the place rent-free, but Amanda gets the bed, and Sydney's going to be taking the couch. And Sydney tries to cite her rental agreement, though she sounds apologetic rather than firm, so of course Amanda bulldozes her, saying the emergency situation nullifies the agreement. It does? I don't think so.
Shaw Major, not a thing.
No. I mean,
also,
if anything.
Why isn't the county picking up the tab for this murderer's pair? Right. Hello?
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Right. Back at the hospital, Peter lets himself into Kimberly's room. She's been going over everything she did in the past couple of days and can't account for every moment except the explosion. But she knows Peter saved her life. She swears she's not a bad person. She wouldn't hurt anybody. And again, considering what we know about this character, which is that she absolutely would hurt people and has tried to kill people a lot, it's amazing that Marcia Cross still somehow makes this desperation, like, really heartbreaking. Like, you can't help feeling empathetic for her even though you know what she did. Good episode. The show.
Yeah, not bad.
Firing on all cylinders still. So let's name our episode MVP. I'm going to say Peter because I don't know what his angle is, why he's being so solicitous about Kimberly. But, I mean, he's extremely generous as far as we know right now and, like, really looking past, you know, the crime in a way that everybody else is not. So I admire the size of his heart for her, given all of the, you know, extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I'm going to say Kimberly, who should be, you know, like Michael said, chained to a radiator in a Tascadero. But, I mean, like you said, that Marcia Cross can make her sympathetic is really something. And she's, like, really a fascinating, like, compelling, charismatic character still. And credit to the show for recognizing that and continuing to avail itself of that. I'm sure Dr. Peter Burns has, you know, some end game that has nothing to do with Kimberly's actual welfare, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, whatever his angle is, it's benefiting her in the short term.
Mm-hmm. And us as well.
Yes. Least valuable player. Jane, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. Next time on Again With This, Jane and Richard fight over a sleeve, Billy and Brooke fight over a lie of omission that we also had omitted, and Matt fought the law, and the law... Actually, the law let him win a round for a change, so now he's just fighting everybody else. You'll be in a fight with your retinae after you peep our visual aids. You'll find those for this and every episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com, which is also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Broach of Metaphor, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is New Yorker cartoon sunglasses case, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Soft Restraint, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?